Coming right up, Straight Talk with Art Levine. This special edition of Straight Talk features Michael Josephson, founder president of the Josephson Institute of Ethics.
Opinions expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of Charter Communications nor its sponsors. We recognize our obligation to present opposing points of view by responsible spokespersons. For information, please contact the director of program.
She stands in the face of evil and will not lose hope or faith. America, the land of freedom, is still the home of the brave. So raise the banner.
Straight Talk is brought to you in part by Southern California Edison. For over 100 years, life powered by Edison. The Press Telegram, your local news leader for over 100 years. And Laserfish, run smarter.
Join us for tonight's edition of Straight Talk. And now your host, Art Levine.
Hello, I'm Art Levine, professor of ethics and legal studies, coming to you from the campus of California State University, Long Beach. Our guest today is Michael Josephson, president of the Josephson Institute of Ethics and distinguished ethics consultant. Michael, welcome to our show.
Terrific to be with you. Thank you.
Michael, give us a report card on ethics in America today.
Well, we're not doing too well. You know, I mean, it's spotty. There are some areas where we've gotten better. For instance, the area of character education has really bloomed in the last 10 years, but that's because the report card is not very good. Whether you look at business, for example, we had more major business scandals in the last 5 or 6 years than in the whole history of this country combined. More people have gone to prison for longer sentences combined than has ever happened. We have more multimillionaires in jail now than we've ever had before. We've certainly had the sports scandals. You can't turn around without having a new sports scandal, of whether it's Belichick and his videotaping or Marion Jones and her steroids or whatever the issue is. We've had the church scandals, you know, certainly in the last 5 years that have been very significant. Journalism scandals everywhere you look. So the fact of the matter is these are challenging times, and these are times when ethical shortcomings are far more likely to be reported and visible, and the internet makes everything, you know, huge. So Paris Hilton becomes not only a star, but a villain very quickly. We know all about her jail situation, etc.
Do you think that the level of ethical behavior today is better, worse, or the same as a generation ago?
You know, I think it depends on the areas. I think in some areas it's better. For instance, professional ethics is better. There are more legislation regulating politicians. There's more legislation regulating businesses. And so some conduct that occurred in the past casually really doesn't happen anymore. Professional standards have increased dramatically in policing and accounting, et cetera, in spite of all the scandals in accounting. But when it comes to personal ethics, when it comes to the idea of just people making personal decisions, I think there's evidence of some real deterioration. We're not sure because it never got as much publicity as it does today. Things travel around the world so quickly today, but the decisions of people to cheat and lie, our surveys of American youth are a little depressing. Almost two-thirds of all the high school students admit they've cheated in the last year. 28% say they stole something from a store in the last year. So this is not ever. This is not like they're 9 and 10-year-olds and the like. You have some of these reality shows that are really promoting some of the worst of ethics. You know, you start out with the idea of some level of collaboration, but you end up with one person standing and somebody's got to stab the other person in the back. So I think we're in troubled times.
First of all, as you know, I teach ethics as well as law. Can you teach people ethical behavior?
Well, first of all, anything that can be learned can be taught, you know, and the idea is, can a person, one, learn even what ethical principles are? Yeah, you can think more systematically about it. Simple thing when we're dealing with kids, helping them understand the difference between lying and deceiving. Both of which are dishonest, but maybe if they didn't lie, they'd say, well, there's nothing wrong with that. So one, there are certain dimensions that you can teach, which helps what we call discernment, the ability to know right from wrong. If you're in special fields like politics to understand conflicts of interest or the problems with gifts, that isn't intuitively obvious. That part is easy to teach. The challenge isn't so much in making people aware of what the ethical standards are, although we've worked very hard with Character Counts, which is our program that we use both in youth and in business as well, to have six core values so people have a sort of a framework to use. The challenge is to instill it as an operational standard.
To use it,
not just something that anybody can quote and say.
Right.
It's sort of like Sunday school
feel
ethics,
yeah.
Different than everyday ethics.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go through those six principles, because I know your Character Counts program is widely used in the K-12 schools throughout America.
Yeah, and the goal was, is when this happened in 1992, when we had done a study of the ethics of American youth, the very first time we did it. We now have a national report card every 2 years, which reports the state of things. But that was the first year we did it, and it was pretty depressing. And the purpose of it, by the way, was to tell businesses what Workforce 2000 was going to be like.
Ah,
you know, saying,
this is the future.
This is
the future.
Be concerned. And the study alarmed us and others, and we published a piece called There's a Hole in the Moral Ozone, and It's Getting Bigger.
Okay, so those six principles, very briefly.
Well, are trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and citizenship. And the idea is that these are principles that can be adopted whether you are a conservative or a liberal, whether you come from a religious or a secular perspective. That's the point. They're universal, non-ideological, solid core values that define what a good person is.
And you need to learn how to employ those principles in your daily decision making, both in your personal life and professional life. And I know from my experience with you that you don't separate the two, the difference between personal ethics and business ethics, or ethics.
Yeah, ethics is what you do as a person. Yeah. Whether you're doing it in the context of business or in sports or at home as a parent, it's what you do. We later look back and evaluate it. We might say there's sort of a culture in law or a culture in policing or a culture in journalism that we tend to erroneously call the ethics of journalism.
Right.
See, ethics is not about the is, it's about the ought. In other words, ethics isn't just a description of how people behave. Otherwise, you could go to a gang and say, what's the ethics of that gang?
Right.
Ethics is a word that's designed to talk about principles of right and wrong, and as to what is good and proper behavior. The interesting thing is the way, when I'll do a parent meeting and derive the six pillars, I say, what do you want for your children? What kind of person do you want to date and marry your children? And those six pillars will always come. You want somebody who's trustworthy. I mean, you don't want your kid to be dating somebody who's a jerk and they can't trust. You want somebody to be responsible. You want them to be respectful. So these six pillars are guidelines to life.
And I know that you believe that in judging a particular act, it's not enough to ask, is it legal? You also have to ask, is it ethical?
Clearly, the is it ethical is the more dominant question. There are even some narrow circumstances where it may be legal and still wrong, or situations where even you have a moral obligation to violate the law, as in civil disobedience. Ethics is a much broader concept. Now, generally speaking, a person ought to follow the law. That's part of ethics. That's citizenship. But that something is not proper just because it's permissible.
And it's not improper just because it's not.
Exactly. Well, you know, Potter Stewart, a former Justice of the Supreme Court, said there's a big difference between what you have a right to do and what is right to do.
Yeah.
And that captures that same
notion. And so many people get into trouble, and institutions get into trouble because they don't make that distinction.
Well, and they're just because they're really starting with the question, what can I get away with? I mean, if your initial question of your lawyer or of your business counselor or of your political advisor is, can we do this, not should we do this, you get a very different kind of answer.
So the goal in life is not to conform your behavior to the minimal levels of the criminal law.
Well, you know, I'd put the goal in life is to have a rewarding, successful life. The ground rules of pursuing that goal are ethics. So the idea is that, to me, I don't live to be ethical. I mean, that's not my end goal. I try to live and enjoy my family and have some pleasures, but I have to do it ethically. It's the ground rules by which you pursue anything you want.
Now, I know your background. You were the youngest law professor in America at Loyola at the age of 27.
A long time ago.
You created an incredibly successful bar review course that was very financially successful, and then you decided to do a 180 and get into focus on ethics and name this institute after your parents.
Well, it was a little more of a transition than that because, interestingly enough, when I was a law professor, I was assigned to teach the ethics course as a law professor because it was right after Watergate. And so what happened is the Bar Association was sort of beside themselves. 21 lawyers were guilty of obstruction of justice or felonies. And so somebody says, oh, what are we to do? And somebody says, ah, they didn't have a course. So they created a course in law school as if you wouldn't know how to not to lie if you didn't have a course. And so I started gradually getting into ethics as a law professor.
I see.
And I became much more engaged in it, and then I had a child, and that changed my whole life. I have five children now, but when my first child was born in 1976, that was a life-changing event, because prior to that, I looked at ethics like, well, what's the downside risk? Whose ethics? Your ethics? After all, they ate dogs in Singapore, they burned widows in India, who am I to judge? I was a relativist.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you have a child and say, that's not the way I want to raise my child.
Yes.
There's got to be some rights and wrongs about this child, and that stayed me on the road. And so when I did have the opportunity to sell this private company, the publishing and bar preparation company, I decided to found the institute in honor of my parents. I've been a full-time volunteer ever since.
Well, you've had such a profound influence, and it's very gratifying to do your life with something that you really believe in. And I know from anecdotal experience that a lot of people in the private sector who are making maybe big bucks but don't find that fulfilling are leaving and taking jobs in the not-for-profit sector at much less salary because they want to feel they're doing something worthwhile with their lives. To go to your point of what kind of life do you want to lead?
Yeah, Alfred Nobel had the unusual experience of reading his own obituary. And the reason this happened is his brother died, and they printed his obituary. And he read it, and he got very depressed. He brooded for weeks.
By mistake.
Yes. And by most people's standards, it was a great obituary. He was wealthy. He had invented dynamite. He was generous in his time. But he realized there was a difference between success and significance. And he decided to create the Nobel Prizes for Human Achievement to move beyond success to significance.
The founder of dynamite, as some of you may know, founded the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Well, what an odyssey you personally have taken, and an impact that you've had on so many people. Looking to the future, and we'll talk about that in the next segment of the show, what do you see as the way out of our current morass?
Well, I think, one, we have to return to values and decide that's what's important. And it's not just important for society, which it is. It's important to live a meaningful and fulfilling life. I mean, people find out when they live a selfish life, it's like living in a dark dungeon. And you just never have what you need. You don't have the light, you don't have the air, you don't have the right food. You all of a sudden start to give and start to contribute and participate in society and feel good about it. It just changes your perspective on everything. And the little lies that we tell to get these tiny little stupid advantages seems so trivial and embarrassing sometimes. You look at it and say, I saved $3 in a movie theater, so I lied about my kid's age in front of my child to give him that lesson. What's the matter with me? Or I went in the 10-item or less line with 14 items, but I convinced myself, since these are the fruit group, and I counted the entire fruit group as one thing. I mean, shame on us.
Okay, we'll be continuing with this remarkable man after we pause.
Electricity is different from any other product we use. We can't store it. We must use it wisely, but can't do without it completely. And there's no substitute for this special form of energy that brings us light, comfort, and progress. That's why California needs new standards that can keep utilities strong, guard against another power crisis, and protect consumers from the kind of shortages that often affect other commodities. Because electricity is different.
The Port of Long Beach, one of the region's largest construction contractors, has work for businesses big and small. The SBE, or Small Business Enterprise Program, was established by the Board of Harbor Commissioners in 2004 to boost the local economy. Through this program, small businesses get a chance at big port contracts in the areas of construction, environmental consulting, engineering and architectural services, and more. To learn more, log on to www.polb.com or call 562-590-4146.
Let's unravel high-definition television. First of all, it's twice as sharp as regular TV, and prices have dropped dramatically. There's also tons to watch, like sports, movies, and concerts. You should see it on Panasonic's new 50-inch plasma display. You can check it out at Avid Electronics in Long Beach. What else are you going to do with your free time? Origami?
AccuFlex, a division of Laserfiche in Long Beach, provides high-volume document scanning and indexing, converting bulky paper files into retrievable documents.
AccuFlex has provided us with a system that enables reporters to access our database of news material. It gives us peace of mind to know we can put our trust and faith in AccuFlex and that they're helping us to preserve our history.
AccuFlex works with Laserfiche to provide document management solutions that help organizations run smarter.
We're continuing our conversation with Michael Josephson, president of the Josephson Institute of Ethics, and we've identified the problem of ethics in America as a serious one. How does the Institute approach and address that problem?
Well, first of all, it is really to first of all, spread the news that there is a problem. You know, I think of this story about this man who wakes up in the middle of the night and he's pacing the floor back and forth, and his wife says, "What's the matter?" He says, "We owe Charlie $5,000. We're supposed to pay him the first thing in the morning. I don't have the money. I don't know what to do." And she picks up the phone and dials it and says, "Hello, Charlie, you know that money we owe you? We don't have it. Good night." She hangs up. And the husband says, "What'd you do that for?" She says, "Look, now it's his problem. Come to bed." So the first thing we have to do is recognize it's our problem. You know, it's not his problem. It's not just the school's problem. It's not just parents. It's all of our problems. And so what the Institute tries to do is provide resources and tools. We're a nonprofit institute. Our website is charactercounts.org. All kinds of free downloadable things for whether you're a parent or somebody in business or working in sports or in government. How can you begin to find a way to employ these principles? I'm excited about the projects. Right now, I'm in two or three major projects. We're working with a huge supermarket chain, you know, and helping them restate all of their values. They have over 300,000 employees. And the idea of how do we make that supermarket family-friendly internally to their own people as well as to their customers. We're working with the U.S. Olympic Committee. Every single potential Olympian, every Olympic hopeful is going through a program we've designed to, we call it Make Us Proud, the U.S. being Make Us Proud. Okay. And it's about the Olympic ideals and sportsmanship, pursuing victory with honor. The whole L.A. Unified School District has hired the Institute to train every single one of their coaches, over 1,300 coaches.
Fantastic.
About pursuing victory with honor and how to integrate it so you're not just trying to win. We're working for at least three major Fortune 500 companies. Some of them have been in trouble, you know, looking to how do you, recast your reputation.
And that's not necessarily bad. I mean, they're not PRing it. I'm sure you wouldn't work with them if it was just papering it over.
In fact, that's the first challenge. Are you serious or not?
And
you
I know, remember because Enron had a great code of ethics.
Exactly. It's not about rhetoric. It's what you do. And the last one, just to mention, to show the impact, the Department of Defense recently commissioned us to help them move from what they call a rules-based compliance culture to a values-based ethical culture. And that's because they sent someone to our training. By the way, I remember you from over 15 or 16 years ago. You went to one of those early trainings.
It changed my life. Michael's one-week workshop.
Well, we thank goodness every now and then we have that impact, and somebody from the Department of Defense came to one of those workshops and says, "This is what we need. We got too many rules." We're giving people 6 hours lectures, they call them briefings, in the Department of Defense on just gifts alone. On whether they can take gifts or
not. The thought just occurred to me, instead of giving a bunch of rules and trying to teach those rules to the people, if they could instill the values so that the people individually get it, then they could be on the moon and they could do the right thing.
You know, both you and I are lawyers, and as part of the lawyer, you apologizing or not, but, you know, we were trained to look at the detail of the law. And so you had this tendency to say, is it okay or is it not okay? And your job was to figure out ways to make it okay, never thinking about what's the purpose face of the law.
This is off the subject a bit, but I've come to the conclusion that the law is not unethical, but it's ethically neutral. And none of what you teach we got in law school, it is what is legal, how can you wiggle through the contract, all that kind of stuff. And is the law unethical as a profession?
Certainly not, but many people practice it unethically. You know, and many of our systems don't function well. We have to be very careful about separating the institutions. Like, the church is not unethical, although there may have been some people within the church who certainly did bad and unethical things. But what the legal training taught us to do was ignore our ethical instincts.
Yes.
You didn't ask, was it fair? That was an inappropriate question to ask in law school. You may remember that. A professor says, don't ask that. Just, can you do it or not? You don't know who's going to hire you. You're not supposed to care about to whom your services are being used. Well, I disagree with that. I understand, and I believe the law can and should allow for guilty people to be represented. I believe there are many ethical ways to do that. But I will be ethically autonomous my whole life, and I refuse to not be accountable for my choices.
So I may have overstated. So the law is not unethical, but it's ethically neutral.
Amoral.
Amoral.
It is by the nature
yes.
amoral.
Yes.
And there is a place for that. The client doesn't necessarily hire you to be his conscience, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be. It doesn't mean that with your perspective, I'm fortunate, I'm about to go to New Orleans where I'm doing a program of 2 hours for all the chief judges in the country of the courts of appeals.
We had a wonderful federal procedure professor, famous Willie Moore, Moore's Federal Procedure, and I'll never forget, you guys are hired guns. You get in there, and that's your role in life, and I still remember that.
And we're the counterforce. You know, look, the whole world I see in terms of Star Wars, there's the force and the dark side.
Okay.
And there'll be both, you know?
Okay.
I was on the dark side for quite a bit of time. You know, when I was teaching trial advocacy, when I thought that way, that's what I was taught, and I thought I wasn't evil, but I wasn't doing good. And some of the things I did were actually aiding evil. You know, Edmund Burke once said, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing.
Right.
I was doing nothing particularly evil, but I wasn't doing things good. I don't believe that now. I'm not a hired gun. You know, I have the capacity to do things that a normal civilian doesn't know how to do.
Well, your passion for what you're doing seems now, it just occurred to me, possibly driven by what you did before. As a reformed anything, has a particular passion and knowledge of exactly what is involved.
I think that's obviously true. I mean, we're all creatures of our experiences and creatures of you know, what we did and didn't do and learned and didn't learn. To me, again, the center of my whole life is my family and my children. And when I think of who I want to be in the eyes of my children, this hired gun is not how I want to be defined. I don't want on my tombstone, never lost a case, you know, or the toughest lawyer in town, you know? I want the idea that I was a good father and a good person and I made the world better in some kind
of way. And I remember in your workshop, you use the kid on the shoulder analogy when you're thinking of an ethically questionable decision. Imagine your kid looking over your shoulder.
Yeah. How would you behave if they were watching what you're doing?
Yeah.
You know, this idea of moving beyond from success to significance is an important one, too. I was successful financially. I've never worked harder than I work now for free. But I've never had a more rewarding sense that every day makes a difference, whether it's my radio show on KNX, and it's now been picked up by a number of other stations, or some of the columns, or the books, or the lecturing, or a wonderful opportunity to speak to your audience now.
Yeah.
I hope we're reaching some people and helping them tap into that part of themselves that is there, but is not necessarily emerging because there are other pressures, and people think, well, I can't afford to be ethical. You got to be rich to be ethical. Yeah, are rich people more ethical than non-rich? No. Has nothing to do with it.
And I know you would agree with me that money alone does not buy happiness.
Yeah, money.
You probably know, as I do, many wealthy people who are not happy folks and people of modest means who are quite content.
Yeah. Happiness is a state of mind that's achieved when you feel good about yourself and your life. You can have fun for a while, and people confuse happiness with fun. And they confuse pleasure with happiness, too. You can have fun and pleasure for a while, but the playboy gets bored of it and ultimately gets home with his drunk and his hangover. You cannot link enough instances of fun together to have a good life. You have to have a sense of worthiness, a sense of contentment. When I think of my kids, it makes me happy. I can just think of them, and a smile comes across my mind, and I said, that's a good state of affairs.
Yeah. And so a sense of gratitude for all of your blessings also adds very much to the richness of a life.
And is so opposite to so much society. Today's society is entitlement, which is the opposite of gratitude. So anything that I have is because I deserve it, and I deserve more than I'm getting. And in fact, I don't get it. I'm resentful. I'm bitter. I'm nasty that you got more than me. As opposed to say, look what I got. You know, it's that old story about, you know, I'm lamented that I had no shoes until I met a man who had no legs. You know, all of these things are these truisms that matter, the half empty, half full. Optimism is not just an idea for fuzzy-headed Pollyannas who don't think. It's a survival skill. It's a way of saying, wait a minute, I choose to be happy. I choose to enjoy my life. I choose to be constructive. I don't choose to wallow in my frustrations, my disappointments, my losses, and my resentments. That is a choice. And ethics says you make that choice and you're in control.
So you actually do control your life and your future by your own choice.
Everything.
And you can choose to be ethical. You can choose to be happy.
You can't. It isn't easy. I wish I could choose to be thin, you know. But, you know, I have to back it up with commitment. And that's always hard. You know, I want to be thin whenever I'm not hungry. The problem is when I'm hungry, I'll rationalize. So yeah. I'm still struggling on certain areas.
Sure.
But I still know it's in me. I can't blame anybody else for the fact that I'm not thin. I have to make that choice. Or if somebody's smoking. And if they can't blame anybody for not smoking except themselves. You know?
In just a minute or two we have left, Michael, your website again for your institute is?
CharacterCounts.org, O-R-G.
Yeah. And what would you say to people who are inspired, as so many are, by you and want to do something today or tomorrow about changing their orientation towards life?
Well, first of all, do it piece by piece in little things. Just do a couple of nice things a day. You know, make a self-conscious effort. Every time you catch yourself being bitter or resentful, turn it around and say, this is nonsense. Why am I eating myself up? Carrying a grudge hurts only you. It's like holding a hot coal in your hands. I'll show you. I'll keep burning my hands by holding this hot coal. Make sensible decisions about your life. Care about your community. Care about getting involved in some way. We have a newsletter of just my commentaries. I do a radio commentary. It's free. You know, go to charactercounts.org. Get it every week. Maybe it'll inspire you to share it with somebody else and have an idea. Everyone has within them that spark of feeling good about themselves and making a contribution.
Michael, it's a pleasure to see you again after 15 years, and thank you so much for taking the time to visit our campus at California State University, Long Beach. And you are truly an inspiring figure, and your passion shows through so loud and clear.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you all for joining us from the campus of California State University, Long Beach. This is Art Levine.
Bill Trainees mixes California style with continental cuisine that includes fresh seafood from around the world. Since Phil is the chef, the menu has a wide variety of pastas, salads, soups, and appetizers that feature his unique personal touch. And the Italian-American signature dishes are simply beyond delicious. You never know who you're going to run into at Trainees, from the famous sports legends on the Wall of Fame to local celebrities having a drink at the bar. For the best fine dining experience, visit Phil Trainees.
At Performance Plus Tire, you'll find we carry Toyo tires. For over 50 years, Toyo has been a world leader in the development of high-quality tires. Optimum performance, safety, and a comfortable ride. That's what makes Toyo tires great. And now come into Performance Plus Tire for a great deal on these Toyo tires. Proxies ST, Open Country AT, and Proxies 4. Toyo tires, driven to perform. Come in today and we'll install new Toyo tires on your vehicle while you wait. Performance Plus Tire on Cherry Avenue, 1 mile north of the 405 in Long Beach.
Sometimes you just need a good lawyer. Sometimes life is complicated, unfair, or you may be wrongfully accused. Hi, I'm Rich Poland. I've been helping people in Long Beach for over 25 years. You've already taken me into your home. I'm on the back of your big phone book. I've helped your kids reach the table. I've even held the door open for you. The State Bar has certified me as a criminal law specialist. I'm here to help because sometimes you just need a good lawyer.
Welcome to Maury's of Naples. Maury's is a unique store specializing in wine, spirits, beers, gift baskets, gourmet foods, and European specialties. Upon entering, you'll encounter a vast selection and a staff that is more than willing to assist you. Take time to look around. You'll be amazed. Wine and beer tasting is held every week. Visit Maury's.com to get the latest information. Maury's of Naples, since 1938, where customer satisfaction is our top priority.
Straight Talk has been brought to you by Southern California Edison, the Press Telegram, and Laserfish. And remember, Straight Talk is viewable worldwide 24/7 at StraightTalkTV.com.